Welcome back to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. The music indicates it's time for the Mod Squad. Roberto Alejandro, my colleague at the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper, number one black newspaper in the country, continues with me in the studio. Taya Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network, they are traveling. We know that for a fact. We're hoping that they can report in from their remote, wherever it is, offer us a dispatch. They have been, I believe, Roberto, in Pocomoke most of the week. And the word that Stephen used to describe what he has seen recently is unreal. So I'm curious to hear what they have to say, if we can get them. I'm not sure if we'll be able to. But in
I can kill some time with an update from Mr. Michael Wood, who just sent me a text. He was listening to the segment, and he says, for the record, the LEOBR does matter, but not that much. The Sal Riviera case, which was the police officer who was caught on YouTube yelling at the white teenagers about the skateboard. He says that case established case law that the commissioner could fire anyone for any reason, and it was upheld on appeal. So it's really on the police commissioner. Don't let them pull the wool over your eyes. And so, I mean, he's suggesting there that really the LEOBR, while it does offer some protections, the police commissioner can get around it if he has the sort of political will to do so.
Well, so this whole notion that somehow the LEOBR is this mammoth obstacle to correcting wrongs, to reform within the department, seems like, according to Wood, is somewhat of a smokescreen.
Yeah, it really does start to feel like a red herring in light of that comment. You know, and it sort of raises a number of issues, which is, you know, what is the conversation we really should be having with respect to police reform here in Maryland and Baltimore and elsewhere? And who exactly should have a seat at the table? Because especially in light of some of the things he said during our interview, and one of the things he says, you know, cops have a tendency to be hammers and see everything as nails. Mm. And so when you talk to them and you offer sort of different alternatives to the way they currently do things, they just say, no, everything's a nail and we hammer it. That's what we do.
I would not be offended if Mr. Wood decided to call in now. I'm just putting that out into the universe real quick, because he has some fascinating insight into that job that he did for 11 years. And again, his indictment was not just of the Baltimore City Police Department, but of law enforcement, I believe, generally. I mean, is that what you got out of the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the things he said are pretty much applicable across the board to any law enforcement agency that you can imagine. And part of the reason I raised this issue of who should be involved in the conversation is at one point I said, you know, does it even make sense in light of everything he was saying to talk about best practices? And his point was, no, it doesn't make sense to talk about best practices because there are no best practices being implemented anywhere. You know, police departments largely do things in the same way, regardless of where they are. And so the idea that we can just find the law enforcement agency that's doing it the best way and then just implement that everywhere else is itself a false notion.
Michael Wood, if you're willing, you can call us at 410-319-8888 is the number, 410-319-8888, and we will be more than happy to talk to you on the air and basically bolster the interview that you gave to Roberto. It was a fascinating conversation. I got through most of it. I'm curious what he would. I mean, I was looking at this story in The Sun that talks about State's Attorney Mosby's her suggestion that this homicide commission would be a waste of time and a waste of money. So in rebuking what she said, I guess, in their minds at least, The Sun went out and whoever the instruction came from editorially, they went out and they went and got some of Greg Bernstein's old prosecutors. And it's like, do you not understand that, I mean, it just seems absurd almost on its face that you decide to take this route in order to try to combat what the state's attorney said about her thoughts on this homicide commission. These are two former prosecutors under the Bernstein camp that clearly, you know, have their own thoughts about Marilyn Mosby. And then they also interviewed the Mr. Webster from the Hopkins School, where they've done all these surveys on shooting and murder and all that stuff. And it's just interesting. It's interesting. And we can get into that a little bit later. But we're joined by Michael Wood. He indeed did call former Baltimore City Police officer for 11 years on the force. Michael Wood, thank you for calling in. We appreciate you.
Hey, how you doing, guys? No problem.
We're doing well. If there, the whole notion, Michael, of law enforcement reform, a subject that we have spent months on, literally, prior to the death of Freddie Gray, when many people in the Baltimore community were talking about going to Annapolis and seeking significant reform within the Baltimore City Police Department, talk about the challenge, and I'm putting challenges in quote. Marks, air quotes, as I'm saying it. Talk about the challenge of what reform within the Baltimore City Police Department. How could that be obtained given some of the narratives that you've thrown out here?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question, right?
Yeah.
So where would we go? I think the things like that 300-man march are doing, the things that DeRay McKesson are doing, the things that Maurice Ashby are doing, all these things are very good. Mm-hmm. But the problem is we have this overarching problem in our whole society. So if you're talking about the biggest impact thing, I think the biggest impact thing would be to end prohibition right away, because that way you take away a tool that law enforcement has to enact their discrimination. Mm. So, like, it's so hard to talk about what we can do individually because it will be temporary. So say a mayor makes the reform and does these things, we only have that guarantee until that mayor leaves. So we have to figure out how to fundamentally restructure what we expect of law enforcement. And that's why you heard me say before, what is it that we want from police? That's the question that needs to be answered first. And then we need to figure out how we can achieve that goal.
That's really an important statement, because when we talk about what we want from police, we heard two former cops, Oscar and Ernest, talk about the fact that residents of Baltimore will say when faced with violence in their neighborhoods, when faced with homicides in their neighborhoods, when faced with drug dealing in their neighborhoods, they will say, lock people up. And the police are more than happy to abide by that, I think. What I'm hearing you say is that as a community, as a society, we have to come to an understanding, a fuller understanding, a specific understanding of what it is indeed we want from police and what they can actually provide.
Right. And what role we want them to be. So when you sit there and you say that they want to lock people up, that's true. They do say that. But there's one thing we know that doesn't work. And that's locking people
exactly
up.
True.
So
exactly
why
true.
Would we keep doing
exactly
that?
Exactly true.
What we're doing, that's why I say it's crazy, because we're using the exact same things that we've been using for hundreds of years, and we know without a doubt it doesn't work.
Exactly true. We had a caller on a couple of, a week or so ago, who said that exact thing. We need to go and lock people. And I got into a bit of back and forth with her about that. I mean, we have empirical evidence literally that shows that it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, and it's also striking that, right, we have these police agencies. So these are literally our professional law enforcers. And they take cues from us who don't do this at all.
Right.
And I mean, even that in and of itself is crazy. And it speaks to what Mr. Wood has said about, you know, mayors following politics or ideology in terms of how they run a police department.
And I would argue, Michael, that to a great extent, politicians drive the narrative or drive the conversation about locking people up as being somehow a deterrent to crime or somehow dealing with the woes that our community deals with.
Yeah, and it sounds conspiratorial, but it's actually quite easy. Who donates to your politician? The prison complex.
Right.
So then when they vote for things that support the prison complex, or even if they subconsciously have that idea in their head, why would we be at all surprised? They don't actually vote for what the people want. I mean, this country already has decided that we had to go to Supreme Court for gay marriage rights, and we still have marijuana being illegal when the whole country has already decided that that's silly.
Right. One other thing you said, Michael, about the command staff and the mandate, if you will, from on high from a commissioner. On the street, nothing changes. Cops do what they are going to do. And that seemed to be a sentiment that was bolstered by both Ernest and Oscar, two former police officers, that it's they're going to do what they do. Is there a method, if you will? Is there somehow a commissioner could be able to affect the type of change needed to get officers to fall in line, more specifically with the mandate from the commissioner's office?
Well, I think the police department can do it, and I think the people can force it. You just change the metrics. So we stop judging officers by how much they arrest.
Right.
Even if we just took it to if they have a successful conviction, it would be worlds worth of difference. Because if you don't get any credit for locking people up and you have to do all the paperwork and you only get a credit for the conviction, well, then you're not going to lock up people that you know aren't going to get a guilty.
Right. Right.
No, I mean, that's really an interesting idea, because it would impact really, you know, how we go about collecting evidence, making sure that you do have probable cause if you are making an arrest, that it would uphold legally. But, you know, that also speaks to another thing which we discuss in the interview, which is the sort of general lack of training, or at least adequate training, to prepare officers with a full knowledge of that law and of their sort of constitutional duties with respect to policing before they hit the streets.
I want to ask you this, Michael, and I heard this within the context of your interview with Roberto, and you were very, very careful not to suggest that police officers generally are dumb. And I understand that hesitation in you. But, I mean, are we not providing – I'm not even going to talk about the training, but I'm just talking about the general knowledge base that police officers have to have as far as the Constitution and laws are concerned in our country. Are we not enforcing or commanding, if you will, that they have a higher base level of knowledge as far as law enforcement itself is concerned?
Well, it's quite, I mean, it's readily apparent. And what I want to say all the time is that they're ignorant, and we have kind of a negative connotation on that word. But ignorant just means you're uneducated on,
right,
on the subject.
Right.
So they aren't given the tools to actually know it, nor are they held to a standard that would affirm that they have continued knowledge in the subject.
Indeed. Let's take a phone call. Michael, stand by for a moment, please. Let's take a phone call.
No problem.
Let's go to Clarence in Baltimore as a question or comment. Clarence, you're on First Edition.
Hey, thank you, Sean. Mr.
Yes, sir.
Woods, is it not, or do you feel that it is not incumbent upon police officers all over the country to be under the rule of law themselves and not be protected by the policies of police rights Bill of Rights or whatever that is? I feel that it is incumbent upon the federal government to write the policy of how policing should be done in America, and it should not be left upon policies written by individual municipalities, the mayor, and so on and so forth. How do you feel about that? And second, Sean, you just said he was careful about not to suggest that police officers were dumb. Well, okay, they aren't dumb. So when you pick somebody up and body slam them, knowing full well that it could cause death or serious injury, that means that there was some intent to do harm. When you bend somebody's body like a pretzel, if they're not dumb, then they meant to do bodily harm. You know, there's no distinction between that for me, or they're dumb. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome, Clarence. I don't disagree with what you're saying, Michael. If you want to answer the question that Clarence had, it sounded like he was talking about a kind of an overarching instruction or laws handed down by the federal government. Don't know how what that would look like, but you can go ahead and chime in if you want.
Yeah, I've heard that concept before, Clarence, and I'm really I am tilting towards your side of the argument to even a little further. Like, maybe we need a federalized law enforcement where you have resources and you have a big base where you can actually even, and then you can investigate independently, because you have a much better chance of some guy from California investigating somebody from North Carolina and having less bias because they don't actually know each other because the agency's so large. I am kind of falling towards that side as well. But when you say the individual officer should be held to the laws, I completely agree with that. I think the LEOBR is a result of good intentions that just went wrong. I can understand where they were coming from when they came up with it, but it's just too much the way it's written. Right. But I was just talking about the LEOBR, and it's actually been kind of overruled by the Sal Rivieri case.
Right.
So he sued for wrongful termination, and the legislation that came out, well, it's not legislation, it's case law, said that the police commissioner can fire anyone as long as they violate any departmental policy. Well, if we mess something up, I assure you, a departmental policy was violated. So when a PC sits there and says, oh, well, we can't do this, our hands are tied by the LEOBR, that's a lie. It's a flat-out lie. That police commissioner just doesn't have the courage to do the right thing.
That's a stunning statement, but I'm not challenging it. But I mean, it's still a stunning statement that within the context of what we've been dealing with in Baltimore specifically in the last year or 2 years, whatever time frame you want to put on it, that a police commissioner bought in to reform allegedly would not have the stones, I'll say, to fire a cop if he has the capacity to do so legally.
I mean, but I think it's even more damning than that, though, because, you know, I remember being at one of the early demonstrations for Freddie Gray that took place the Monday morning after he died. And one of the things that Elder C.D. Witherspoon was saying during that rally was that the mayor in the case of Walter Scott, who was a white man, immediately fired the officer and, you know, sort of got the process underway.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, but yet we here in Baltimore have a black woman mayor and she has refused to, you know, there's been no movement, right? And this was just the day after he had died. But this suggests strongly that if there was sort of more political will, both from the commissioner and the person who is the commissioner's boss, which is the mayor, maybe there would have been, there could have been actions taken that might have addressed the anger that ultimately spilled into rioting.
Let's be clear. The mayor in Baltimore, because of the way the city charter is constructed, has wide-ranging power in this city. And it seems like what you just said, Roberto, is absolutely dead on, that this mayor, any mayor in the chair in Baltimore, there are certain things that they could, and given what we've seen, should do in the wake of misconduct that it's an interesting concept. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Baltimore, who has a question or comment. Steve, you're on First Edition.
There are some good police. There are some bad police. And I've always been asking the question that 99.9% of the police shooting, the individuals die. I've seen, for an example, it was a gentleman down at Lexington Market. He had a knife.
Right. I remember the
case. They asked him to put it down. He didn't put it down immediately, nor were he wasn't charging the police officer.
And he was in the process of putting it down, actually.
Right. And this guy got shot, my God, probably 20, 30 times.
Right.
Okay. Now, another incident, the gentleman had a yard break. He got shot over 20-something times. And I keep asking questions. How come every shooting that the police do, they have to shoot to kill?
Well,
every shooting is not
right.
Worth killing.
Well, Steve, thank you for your question. And the short answer is that's what they're trained to do.
Yeah, though, Mr. Wood, I know that military training in this respect differs somewhat from police training. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to that.
Michael, I think Roberto was addressing you.
Yeah, here's the thing, guys. I understand that it doesn't seem on the surface, it seems like they're shooting to kill, but it's really not the case. You have to shoot for center mass because of the adrenaline and because of the fear and because it's so hard to pull off an accurate handgun shot. Anybody that's really good at handguns is going to tell you that that's an absolute necessity. They can't be aiming for like a hand, because if you aim for a hand and you hit the sidewalk, well, that round's going to ricochet and you don't know where it's going to end up. So you have backdrop concerns, you have actual accuracy concerns, you have the ability to actually stop the threat. You have to shoot center mass, and it really is to stop the threat, but that's going to correlate to death more often than something else.
Okay, that makes sense.
The other point that Steve had was that 99% of cops are good, and that's absolutely false. And the problem that I have and why I started getting so animate about everything was when I realized that despite all my efforts, I was not a good cop. There weren't 11 good cops in McKinney. There were 12 bad cops. So I was a bad cop because there was a lot of things that I saw that I didn't do anything about. And in retrospect, I see them now. So if I'm who has this clean record and has this education and has this, I'm the prototype, and I was not a good cop.
I think to his credit, I think the gentleman was saying 99% of shootings end in death, but he did say the vast majority of cops are good. And I think that is an equation that people are starting to rethink as well, though, to be fair. Let's go to Mark in Baltimore, has a question or comment for us. Mark, you're on First Edition.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Uh-huh.
I worked in Baltimore City for 23 years as an officer, and that was with the city police department. And, the one thing that I really feel like we're doing is that we're actually battling the effects of the poverty level in Baltimore City.
Indeed.
And, I think we can all agree that, poverty breeds a lot of things. And one of the things that it breeds is crime. And crime is on an all-time high in the city. And, when you have the police interacting or coming in to combat crime, I'm not saying that, everything is handled, 100% the way that it should be. There are going to be, traps and things that are done wrong. And when administrations come in contact with that situation, they need to deal with it appropriately. Oscar and Ernest, they have said in the past, it doesn't matter who the commissioner is. That's true. A thief is going to steal. A drug dealer is going to sell drugs within the police department. That, until you find out who they are, and even though sometimes they may get away with it, if there are things that the commissioner can do, such as place them in, unit counting batteries, for the rest of their career, if you can't get rid of them. But take them off the street, and as long as you're not penalizing them or whatever, they may have won that case, but still, there's another issue to where you can put them, while they serve out the rest of their career. Right. I've seen guys that were detailed to, the armory, for example, or some place where they don't have to come in interaction with the community, so to speak. So there are things that you can do that will not go against the law enforcement officer's bill of rights. I think Michael Woods would agree with that, and take them out of the aspect of dealing with the community. One other thing, real quickly, is that you have some officers, which I see, that cannot testify in court. And, for whatever reason, they went to court, their testimony was found to be false, and they were put on a list of, do not call.
Right, exactly.
And that right there goes to the essence of what a police officer is supposed to do, give testimony in court. If you can't do that, then I question what good are you if you're an officer. I really question what are the effects of you going to court and you can't testify.
Understood. Mark, I want you to speak to my producer real quick if you can, okay? All right. We're going to have to go to a break. Michael Wood, former Baltimore City member of the Baltimore City Police Department for 11 years. Michael, man, thank you for calling in and shedding even more light on the subject of law enforcement reform.
Yeah, no problem, brother. Keep the discussion going. That's the entire point.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
All right. See ya.
And Roberto Alejandro, I appreciate you, brother. And quickly, I want to shout out the students that we talked to Baltimore City Community, not Baltimore City, Baltimore County Community College. Man, a remarkable experience, actually, last night.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
We'll talk about it more on Friday, but definitely. I just wanted to throw it out there. All right, we're going to go to a break. You're listening to First Edition. Stay tuned.